right, welcome back to episode 53 of the Slide In Podcast. We had a great show today with Kelly and Johnny. Johnny was on here again. Talked a lot about kind of gear versus flies, some musky stuff, Johnny's favorite Will Ferrell movie. We covered kind of a lot of random stuff. And we're still looking for employees at the Slide In and the North Slide. So send your resumes in. We need some shop staff and then some kind of housekeeping staff. So send those resumes to slidein@slidein.com. And today's show is brought to you by the Kelly Inn, which resides in West Yellowstone, just a few hundred feet from the National Park's entrance. While they're open year-round, the shoulder seasons, April, May, September, October, and even November are the perfect time to visit. It's been such a docile kind of late fall, early winter so far. The fishing's just been unreal in the park. So you can fish the, since the park's open year round, you can fish streamers at dawn and then be back in time for a hearty hot breakfast with the family. One of the best parts about the shoulder seasons is being able to explore the park while the crowds are light and the animals are all active. Streamer bite tends to be more consistent during these months as well. The famous Bob Jacklin Casting Pond sits right next door. There are plenty of ground floor rooms so you can walk straight in with your fly rod after a long day on the water. When you're ready to relax, unwind in the indoor pool and hot tub. Book your trip at www.yellowstonekellyinn.com and use promo code SLIDE2025 for 15% off your stay. The Kelly Inn, family-friendly comfort and world-class fishing, all in one spot. Once again, that is promo code SLIDE2025 for 15% off at www.yellowstonekellyinn.com. All right, enjoy the show.
You didn't know that HBO, you know what HBO stands for?
No.
Home box office. How about AOL? America Online. See, you're in the same walls.
What?
Who gives a fuck?
That's my point.
All right.
I like to know what things mean.
The way my brain's working lately, it's getting rid of things. Can't remember anything. So I have room for things that are worthwhile.
Then don't remember that shit.
And AOL is not fucking worthwhile.
Nope. Most people don't know it exists.
Well, we'll keep this in too. This is episode 53 of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson. That's Kelly Gallup. And this is Johnny McClure.
We're starting.
Welcome back.
All right.
Yeah. We're back.
Cool.
Jack. And we're back. We're here.
Oh, Johnny.
It's all happening here.
And improv too.
Johnny and Jack's, that's the same, right?
Jack is John.
Yeah. Same name. So I said, we're back. Jack.
Johnny. Welcome back. Jack. John, Jack.
Johnny.
John in the box.
Stop.
Okay. It's a burger joint.
All right. Well, also unrelated things. I watched a documentary on beavers yesterday.
Cool.
Yeah, it's actually very interesting. David Attenborough. Yeah. Yep. I thought about you.
They're reintroducing beavers in a lot of places to help with their wetlands.
Yes.
This is our infinite wisdom. We wiped them all out and
east of the Mississippi.
Our wetlands.
They're Colorado. They're planting them, right?
All over.
I think I saw a video.
Over the West where we eradicated everything in our genius.
I think it was in the mid-90s, this video, but they were dropping beavers out of planes with parachutes.
Those are cool. Those are special forces beavers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all night drops.
Uncle Larry.
It's all night drops.
They actually have started fitting him with night vision glasses, too.
That's really cool.
Yeah. The beaver.
8 seconds, army. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
This is Johnny's thing, is he'll bullshit you, and he...
Beaver Brigade. No, but they were wiped out.
I dated them once.
They were wiped out east of Mississippi.
They wiped out the whole freaking West.
No, they were still a few slagging around there in the old swamps somewhere.
Somewhere.
I think the biggest one was in Texas, the biggest beaver dam.
I wouldn't know.
That actually makes sense.
Does it?
Stuff's bigger in Texas.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially egos.
Ooh.
Did you say egos or beavers?
Fuck up my piece of plywood.
Well, it can fuck up an anvil. I can fuck up a piece of plywood.
That's some fine woodwork up there.
Yeah, I can see that. Looks like the works of a carpenter.
Yes, it's not great.
Where'd that, I assume
who did
Kelly
the spelling for you on these, by the way? Did you write that by hand?
That's like 1940s.
Anyway, here today on Attention Deficit Disorder in the fly fishing industry.
Was Kelly the first one to call you to say that you could fuck up an anvil?
Yes.
Well, he wasn't the first one that thought it, but he was the first one that said it.
Voiced his opinion about it. Yeah.
Well, he's much better now.
Are you?
He doesn't destroy
I'm
half.
A lot better.
Doesn't destroy half.
I used to run into stuff. Just
think he didn't grow and till late. And,
yeah.
And took a while. Didn't know where your body was.
Mass times velocity.
Just destroyed everything.
Yes.
It was awful.
Dolmite, a human tornado.
When your wife calls you Mongo, you get it.
Well, she's also 5'3".
That's, she's scared. You're going to, like, fall on her or some shit.
Well,
I'm surprised she allows you to round your own baby.
Well, that's also, I haven't been able to hold her yet, but that's on year two.
Well, she's not one yet.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you haven't been on since you've been Father John.
I am Father John, Papa John.
Father John.
Whatever you want to call
Dad
it.
Dad strength?
Dad strength. I don't think it's changed much as far as strength, no.
Okay.
I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah, I don't know what
that's the thing. Dad strength, old man strength. It's just, they're kind of jokes about
you become stronger. It's a generational thing.
Yeah.
I guess. It's like 7 generations ago.
If you're under the age of 65, then you'll know what I'm talking about.
Gotcha. Sorry, I missed that one.
Yeah, missed that one too. Good thing we've got you to keep us on track.
I keep you.
AOL, yes. Baby.
Yeah.
HBO.
HBO. LOL. LOL.
Oh, that's an LOL. Yeah.
LOL.
Baby. Are you going to do something?
Yeah. Can we start this thing?
We're kind of waiting on you now.
You guys are such jerks.
We hurt your friends.
Yeah. All right, this question comes from Bobby Chunk, which I don't know. I hope that's his real name. That's a good name.
That's a great name, man.
We should. At some point, I got to go back through and do like a top 5 best YouTube commenter names.
Is it his name or is it his handle?
His YouTube name is, or his handle is Bobby Chunk.
That's great.
He says, "Game changers versus articulated streamers chat," with 2 question marks after.
Hmm.
So I'd like to open the floor.
What's the difference? Oh, multiple articulation.
No, just and we've had a couple questions about game changers, and I don't think it's something we really talked about. And so I'm curious. I think I've talked to both you guys at separate times about game changers, and I'd love to hear your opinions on are they functional? Are they better than articulated streamers?
They look really cool. The original ones, and I'll give Blaine a huge pat on the back for coming up with a completely new platform, which is almost impossible to do, but I haven't seen like the proof in the pudding for Trout, and I don't tie enough of them anyway, but as far as commercial,
sexy.
Yeah, they are. They're the feathered ones are look really good. It seems to make the most difference in warm water species. That's mostly where you see it is bass, pike.
Do you think that's because of still water, or do you think they're as effective in
I've tried the micro ones. I haven't caught you can catch a fish on anything. I've had people bring them and fish them, the rainbow ones, the brown trout ones. They saw them at the fishing company. Mm-hmm. I have not noticed that aha moment where it's like we're missing out. They look cool. I think the bigger profile stuff and the way they swim, and I shouldn't even be talking about this because I don't have a lot of experience with them, but I just... with all the stuff that we get to see and all the people who bring their own stuff and flies and all the fishy dudes we have around here, I haven't noticed like a huge moment where, I mean, it would have caught on out west by now, I think. Yeah. But, you know, as far as building a platform to make huge profile stuff that swims like a swim bait, you know, it's kind of unmatched. It really is. So, I don't know.
Ditto.
Yeah.
Same exact.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I love them. We're going to have them next year.
I tied a fair amount of them. I tied a few before I moved out here. And then that first winter, Matt and I were living in the duplex, and he's such a better tire than I am, and it pissed me off.
He tied a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
I mean, he filled boxes. At one point, he had a chain. He would hang them up, the hook. He'd run a hook up front, right, and then run shanks off it. And he'd put the hook through the eyelet of another one, and he had a daisy chain that was like 7 feet tall. I mean, he tied a ton of them. In the time he did his, 50 flies, I think I did like 4. So I was really, really bad at setting feathers.
Yeah.
But I mean, I fished him a fair bit. His were a lot better than mine. I think he fished him some, and then he just kind of went back to fishing articulated streamers.
Yeah.
Traditionally.
There's every river hit. Like, we've talked about that before. Some rivers, you never know. It's just like the Sparkle Minnow.
Yeah,
Johnny and I both fished Sparkle Minnow for 2 years, never caught a fish on it. And almost simultaneously, I have a day, he has a day.
It kind of comes just, on and
like,
off.
Like, what the hell happened? I mean,
it's one of the most popular streamers there is.
Well, that when that happened, it was our most pop. That thing was going out of here like
huge.
Guys would fist them. And we'd go, I'd look at John, I'm like, what the? You caught a fish down this? No, I can't catch a single fish down. And it's a perfect little minnow for this river at that. And, but we were also, I think, fishing them faster than most people were. And
a lot of people dredge them.
Yeah, they were dredging.
A lot of people nymph them.
But
the thing about the game changer too is, like, I mean, the guys that are really good at it, if, look at the guys at Schultz Outfitters. That's their platform for a lot of those patterns. And they're really, really, really good tires there. Like, way better than anybody here. Yeah. And they fish smallies for them. The thing that, the way.
Are they mostly in like, rivers, or are they in still water?
Who?
Schultz guys are in rivers.
They do both.
To me, it feels like a game changer would excel, or, like, the. I think there's diminishing returns on articulations, like, unless you get into still water. Then I could see that you actually...
Not necessarily still water. It could be soft water.
Yeah. More, like, more...
In heavy riffles, it's not going to be that big of a deal. You're going to get...
I think that's why I was kind of getting at, in this river's...
Yeah, in heavy river, you're going to get more movement from a deceiver tail or long marabou than you will from all those shanks. But the other thing, it was a little, I don't know if Blaine, because Blaine went away from Flyman, he's now doing the Chocolate Factory. The thing that made it...
Did we get that done yet?
I don't know. We've got a lot in the works here with this new shop. There's going to be 32 new fly bins, which is what I see every time I close my eyes.
How many do we currently have in there?
14. It'll be 35 more if we do the math right. Anyway, getting back to it, the reason why I didn't, the size of the hook on the commercial ties ones is perfect for trout, but the bodies were only that big. So when you get up to the feather ones, generally they were those big Konas, which is like a 2-aught and a 3-aught. Like, I don't fish, like, a 1 is a big fish. Is it? I mean, everybody does the same thing, myself included. When you start tying big articulated flies, you get your 2-aughts and your 1-aughts. And then you realize that those gauges are way, way too big for trout. Your hookups are not good. 1 is the biggest one I fish for trout. And the Kona and the 3-aught, I mean, if you have a 15-inch fish in there, you're going to probably kill it. I mean, it's a huge hook. So if it was smaller...
By, like, braining it?
It's just a massive hook. It does. Yeah. I mean, it's the type of hook that would go, like, in the mouth and, like, up through the head. Like,
I don't know if it would go that way, but...
I don't know.
I don't buy into that braining thing, but it is a big hook, and it is...
It's too thick. The gauge is too thick.
It's, to me, I'm the same way on my streamer hooks. I don't, like, super... Like, one of my favorite flies is the Bangtail Saltwater. That's what we, you know... That fly's been so good. But it's on that, the smallest, what's the hook on that thing, that silver one?
I don't know on that one.
It's a pretty light gauge as saltwater hooks go.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah,
it's, and I pinch all my barbs anyway, so just in case. Because, like, that size, even if it goes through the jaw right here, through the back through the cheek, it really takes a lot of shit coming out if you don't pinch the barbs. And And so I felt the same way. I mean, I'd like to have them do them in smaller gauges for us.
B10S is, like, my favorite hook for that. But, I mean, it's like a 1 is as big as they go. And after you get past to a 1-aught or 2-aught, 3-aught, that's when it's a much better warm water hook.
Yeah.
And so Game Changer, it's a really cool. It was, like, another huge progression because there was only 2 hooks and 3 hooks. But then realized that you could put it on shanks, and that's where kind of it stopped. There hasn't been a lot of innovation as far as other metallic surfaces you can tie feathers onto after that.
What about, like, I'm not super well versed in it, but I know your old employee Brammer or
Gunner Bramer. Yeah.
Bramer?
I don't know. Gunner does, like, the pop of the
He does the extended stuff. Body
Gummer
stuff.
Bummer.
Yeah. So I know he's doing all that extended body, you know, hollow tie stuff.
Yeah. Pop of the stuff.
Is he kind of who, I know he did the hollow tie, he's like the bucktail god, but did he do the extended body stuff first too? Popovic?
The Beast. Yeah. Beast Fly. That was Popovic's, but he did it differently. He changed the, he did multiple sections that were removable. And then he learned something from Blaine. Apparently I watched one of his videos about where you put the tungsten bead on one of those sections, basically changes. I mean, he's an engineer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of his brain. So it's how that particular section kicks. And again, Braemar spends most of his time fishing for musky and pike and big stuff in still water and trying to have huge profile stuff. It's just something we don't do because we live in the most amazing place.
There's no still water in this river.
But even then, it's like we live in a trout mecca.
We don't have other species.
We don't have a lot of... You got to drive a long way if you want to go chase musky.
Esox.
Yeah. Musky or pike is just not very close to us.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Braemar's in another world.
Yeah.
It'd be really hard to get in that brain.
Yeah.
He's
an innovator, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's got both sides of his brain. They're equally as...
Yeah.
A lot of his family's that way. Very smart, but also very articulate and artsy and... That's when he got just a double dose of the art side, too.
And I love you, Braemar, but you weren't that good when you got here.
He sucked.
Yeah, he wasn't very good at all.
Yeah, but he was like 12.
No, he wasn't. He was like 21, 22. No, Rose and I were like at the table trying to get stuff done, and then this guy walks in, and I was like, hey, man, what's going on? He goes, hi, I'm the guy. I was like, are you Gunner? And he's like, yeah. I was like, oh, cool. You're the guy. Cool. And he started off, but he is just a sponge. He watched everything he did, copied it, and then went and learned hair, work from the best and, got onto Bob stuff. And he just excelled. He became really good because he honed in on it and became obsessed with it. And there's a lot of hard work involved, but there's also just a different type of brain there that helps accelerate that sort of process.
It's cool. Yeah, I told him to go practice hair, and he went and burned like all night and burned, I don't know how many Primo strips. And he came back that he sucked the day when he showed me. Came back and he was better than I was overnight.
Yeah.
The quintessential overnight sensation.
Right.
He burned hair all night.
Yeah.
I don't know how many he did. It was just like. That's tons. Driven.
Yeah.
That's driven.
It's cool. If you go on his YouTube channel, you can watch his progression. I mean, the last time I was on it, when I scrolled all the way down to the bottom, his first videos are posted is like with an OG GoPro. It might even been a different head camera, but he's just walking back here to fish behind the shop, and he gets a couple brown trout.
Yeah, there's one by the West Fork, too, during runoff with the death metal and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got the metal going. And then I think he was the second tire I ever watched on YouTube. I watched Kelly first. And then I wanted to do some more stuff, and I bought a pheasant skin at his recommendation because he does this whole series on the...
On a rump, it's actually...
Yeah, yeah. Well, he does like the pheasant rump bugger and the craw and all these different bait fish and super cool stuff. And it's like, I think tying can be daunting, especially when you're trying to go purchase materials, like when you don't really know what you're doing.
Yep.
I really liked what he did for that. I was like, you get this one material and you can create a ton of different profiles and patterns out of it.
You know that chick I like to watch,
She ties flies, yeah.
If you look back in time without the music and the super close-up and slow-mos of all the really cool shit
the ASMR stuff.
And if he had, beautiful hands like she does. But if you look at Braemar, he drew me, I'd watch him, there was another guy, Jack Gartside did that a lot, where he would talk to you and he'd be doing this shit and it's like, I'm hypnotized, right? But Braemar does that as he's going through the materials, and it keeps, but he's explaining it, and it just kind of happens in front of you.
Yeah,
it's almost.
He's.
I've
really
gone
good.
Through his videos so many.
Yeah,
it's like whoa.
Yep,
really good. But back to the game changer.
Yeah,
that was bad.
I don't know about. Versus, I would have no problem. I've got some small. I too have not done well with them on our rivers.
Yeah,
I'm sure that I didn't do well with the D&D for a long time either. I mean, until he told me he did, and I gave up on it. I couldn't make
the
it.
The head changed so much in a short period of time.
It wasn't what it was.
Well, the heads that we were given, from way back in the day, were way too big for the type of rivers that we fished.
The stone, we had one day where they fished and. I gave up on those too, but the new ones were a lot better for me. But you only get so much trial and error time on a fly before you say
you write it off.
Yeah, and it's off and it goes.
Yep.
And if you're the developer, you're going to spend forever on it. And,
right. Because you want to make your fly fish.
But I don't know. I know a lot of the guys run them on the white, and I don't think they're. one's better or worse than either. I think given the opportunity, either one could outshine.
Yeah.
Regardless of and or including the you know, deceiver style like the bang tail things with the and your kill whitey with the bigger tails. I think it's pretty. The only difference maybe was that there'd be more mass in a game changer as far as putting a wavelength out, but
those original ones were heavy.
Yeah,
when they were just doing basically with that fiber.
Yeah, no, that's not really feather changers. All I'm talking about right now.
Yeah.
I didn't think the game changers or State and Klein's versions of it. I never got a fish on those. No. I could not get them to hunt. Now the game changer is truly. I don't even know if they still make that original style, but I don't see
yeah,
it ever.
Yeah, they did.
But
yeah.
I mean, that one didn't hunt for me, and I gave up on that one. But the feather changers, I've had that little brown one. I don't know if Blaine gave it to me, I think. That one fished for me a little bit, but I don't think one's seriously advantage-wise. I still don't see it on Stillwater. On a fly retrieve. I've seen a lot of retrieves with guys using them on spinning rods.
Yeah.
And
I wonder if you're two-handing it, if you'd get better action out of it than a articulated
but
fly.
I'd rather have a hemorrhoid implanted than do that shit. So it's just me. I mean, I just don't dig it.
Yeah.
Now, they're I think, I don't know, I've seen some, they swim really well with the fly retrieve, but it's better for, you know,
not in this fast of water, though. That's hard to kick. Go.
Said jogging pace, mm-hmm. water, and slower.
Oh.
Jogging pace.
Yeah. Jogging.
Well, yeah, you don't really jog walking? Or run.
There's a reason for that.
You can barely walk.
I don't run. It's unbecoming.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
I don't run because I don't have to.
Yeah.
I remember tying this bug before I came out here. It was black. I had a black brush and a chartreuse brush, and I basically tied a changer with that, just alternating the colors going down to smaller and smaller shanks, and I just like trimmed the brush down so it was kind of tapered like a traditional game changer. I remember floating with Nathan and him just like making fun of me for fishing a game changer, and then I cracked a couple of nice fish on it. It's like they work when they have their day. But yeah, I don't know.
Every fly has its day.
Every fly has its
and
day.
And I guarantee if Blaine came out here and fished with us, he'd have just the same thing. You know, so you don't fish it as much. But there's certain water that's better for certain. Like Johnny said,
it might work. It's not as advantageous, I don't think, until you get into slower water.
All right,
so up on that mow might be great.
Short of a related question.
Yeah, fast.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. It's slower
yeah.
water.
Yeah. That's what I said. Yeah. Up there, it might be great. But it's going to suck when Blaine sends us some of these and says, try this one, and we go out and crush it, and we got to eat our words.
That's cool.
I'm all for it.
Yeah, that'd be a good problem to have.
Yeah, that'd be a good problem. Throw me in that briar patch all day.
All right, so Dot Slug on YouTube says, fellas, full disclosure, I'm an unrepentant, tree-hugging, liberal socialist. And yet I really enjoy the podcast, mostly for Kelly's old school Michigan stories, but plenty of other stuff too. I even sit through 45-minute Kelly Gallup video on how to tie a pheasant tail nymph. I'm lucky enough to live in western Wisconsin. I've been fly fishing for 30-plus years. I've stayed at the slide several times and enjoyed BSing with Kelly. Leaving the politics and keep versus release debates aside, it's fishing, not for going world peace. I do happen to enjoy eating trout, and contrary to Kelly's view, I'm convinced he'd love the trout cakes we make from the Driftless Browns. As I'm currently in my cups, Jameson may be involved, I'll cut to my actual question, which is unrelated to trout. Do you think your streamer techniques translate to muskie? Because I live on a driftless trout river, naturally I want to drive 2 hours north to chase muskie, sometimes out of a float tube, no less. Is that same jerk directional broken cadence retrieve you recommended for trout streamers a good approach for muskie as well? I'd include pike, but let's be honest, they're the most forgiving fish in the entire muskie game. Thanks, and keep the stories coming.
Absolutely. They do very well. I mean, I fished muskies in the same water he did for a long time.
Yeah.
3-year window where it's all about all I did. When that was before anybody was around and you couldn't get anybody to, that was 30 years ago and 25 years ago, and they respond on, it's where the first real articulated bigger breaks where you stall flies,
mm-hmm.
you jerk it and get that kick stall.
Yeah.
That's where that all came from. I never got a trout to go crazy on it until the muskies did it. And so we did the Absolutely. I mean, it's if you swim aside from, I mean, muskies, there's basically three retrieves, right? And so you got a speed retrieve, but then you're a lot of that kicking and stalling. And I absolutely works like a champ.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no, it's once you get good at it, it's like anything else. Watch a guy with a crankbait or particular topwater stuff when you're doing that with a lure.
Mm-hmm.
You're kicking and starting and stop. You're not just right. Unless you're in a buzz bait or something across top water, you're not going to just, you know, have a mono movement out of that. And so it's almost imperative you do it. A lot of those flies, so like when Brad started doing his first one, the hang times were pretty just, they could do that. But then the, what Brad, was the?
Bowen.
Bowen. When the Bufus, is that the next one? The big head? Was that
Buford.
The big? Buford, that one, you know, kind of had its own jerk bait type, you know, going back and forth. And that one you could pull pretty hard. But I got out of it. I was getting out of it as new guys were all coming into it. Like Brad was like the new guy, right? Mm-hmm. Brad Bowen and Willem and guys like that weren't really in the game so much in the beginning. And their flies changed everything. You know, they started doing all kinds of, a lot of that, you know, spook tile where you're kicking back and forth. And,
yeah.
But you could do the same thing with the rod. But when you start running a 13-inch shit and you're trying to crack it with a fly rod, it's not the same as a gear.
No wrist and forearm.
It is really. But I ran mostly 7-inch flies.
Yeah.
I mean, I went a lot of deceiver tails, a lot of bastardized Dahlberg stuff with bigger deceiver tails. Triple articulated heifer groomer stuff before it was the flanks on all of them, but mm-hmm. just to get it to do this, you know, lightening it up so you're, you know, cracking on a 9-weight, and it wears your ass out.
Yeah.
But it's the action of the lure. I mean, that's, you're looking for that swimmy back and forth thing, and mm-hmm. it's a great strike elicitor. And by the way, what's his name?
Dot Slug.
Dot or Slug? 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 Trout cakes are not trout. When you put, it's like, it's, you cannot, it's like,
yeah, it's
breaded.
That's mayonnaise and peppers and spice.
As soon as you put all the shit in there, it's no lie. I eat fish, right? I like fish. Yeah. And I like very few fish because, and one of my favorite, by the way, is Mr. Esox. I love pike. Mm. But it's so freaking bland. Yeah, Jerry loves bluegill fries. Yeah. But how many other ingredients are on it? I like to grill my salmon, and I basically don't eat. I won't eat. I wouldn't eat a king salmon with Johnny's mouth. Yeah. I would not eat one. I mean, I'm like sockeye. I like it. Yeah. I like to taste the fishy thing.
Yeah.
But when you make a cake out of some shit, you could put dog turd in there, and you can mask it. There's nothing you can't mask with enough mayonnaise and breadcrumbs and caking and doing all that. It's like eating. I bet he understands this too. It's like, I've never heard anybody not say the same thing about cooking woodcock, which is a snipe type bird from, you know, and they taste like shit. But everybody says, well, if you, I got a great recipe. You use cream cheese and bacon. Again, wrap a dog term in cream cheese yeah. and bacon. It will taste fine. The only one I ever had that was John Rick's did, and it was a liver pate out of woodcock. That's the only time. Hmm. It was actual woodcock, but by the time you're done with it, you got too many additives. So grab, it's just like walleye. Do you really like walleye? Because if you did and you just fried it, know anybody that fries walleye? No.
Deep fry.
Yeah. You deep fry it, you bread it, you got, in the Midwest, you'll find people that know how to cook it a little better. Yeah. Out here, like everything's perch. Breaded. Huh?
Like perch.
It's still the same
not great.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty bland, but eating brown trout, I just don't.
So I.
But if I was gonna eat, I would try the crab cake, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the thing.
Cake.
Same with like with pike. They're very non-fishy. They're not. They smell like shit when you're. They're just the most awful, gooey, slimy thing. And then you clean them, and they're virtually odorless, right?
Yeah.
But they're kind of almost tasteless too, which makes it great for Jerry when he wants to bread it and chunk it and put it in the deep fryer.
That's what I was going to mention.
And I don't eat deep fryer.
In that episode, I think it was episode 2 of The Hunt for the 30, It might have been the first, but you got that big pike. Or it's not really a big pike. It's not for
good
a pike.
Pike big when he bit me.
It's a good pike, yes.
Good pike for you.
Good pike for
and
you.
And so, you know, you're fighting it. We figure out it's a pike. You're going to land it. Well, I can't cut Jerry's mic off, you know,
right, remotely.
I would have to be up there, and I'm trying to, you know, help net the fish or whatever and film. And Jerry's up at the front of the boat going, we should eat that. We should kill that. And like this streamer's down its throat. You're reaching
we
in
should
there.
Have,
he's
actually.
Like, oh, that tastes so good. Come on, let's kill that thing. And I'm like, Jerry, this is going to be really hard to edit with you fucking talking in the bathroom.
I wish we would have.
Yeah, we should have. We're a little distracted by the whole.
I actually like the pike, the way Jerry does it, better than I do the bluegill. Mm. And you grow up in the Midwest and tell people you're not really a big fan of bluegill fries, you get your ass kicked. It can happen in a hurry, too.
Didn't
especially if Jerry's in the room.
Here with a cooler of frozen bluegill?
Yeah.
Yeah, for the,
right
the,
the plane.
For the big one, right?
150.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Jerry's a bluegill assassin. I mean, it's frightening.
You brought him on the plane?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Two giant cubes.
He froze all of the
fillets.
Yeah, fillets. He froze all the fillets and used them as ice packs to keep water and other stuff cold in his cooler.
Anything to declare?
No.
Yes, sir.
Nope. Yeah, just went bluegill ice packs.
Speaking of eating fish, two guys from Wisconsin were here staying in site. One had the big RV and Wisconsin guys, right? So they bring their fish boils.
Yeah.
And I explained to them they can't do that here. We don't. That used to be a big thing when I bought this
place.
Yeah,
remember when I had to clean all the garbage cans when people would keep Oh, God.
They would do fish fries and it was a thing back in the day. People would actually come and harvest and they'd freeze them and shit like that, right? Yeah. It was totally illegal to do that. And it's not really conducive to my lifestyle to get people out whacking fish to have fish fries, you know. But if it's legal, it's legal. That's fine with me. But the guys are doing the fish fry thing and I'm like, you guys aren't freezing those, are you? I said, because I'm not going to police somebody, but I said, I don't want them freezing fish. And because you only get your day limit plus one, right? You're not, you can't have 100 fish in a freezer somewhere. And
that's hilarious, the tenant possession. How many do you have in your possession? You know, none, actually zero. Okay, I believe you. Are they going to go back and check your...
Well, if they saw boats going up... I mean, it was pretty common, evidently, in the old days. The guys would come in and they'd can them and do this stuff. And, you know, not really conducive to what I was trying to portray here. But at any rate, the guys are from Wisconsin. They go, hey, we got some fish we want you to try. They're white. He says, we're doing whitefish. I says, you guys should know better than that. Because I thought everybody wants to smoke the whitefish here, right? They're too freaking dry. They're not Great Lakes whitefish. They're not oily. They're dry and shit. Everybody that smokes them, and they're like, oh,
did you try any of the ones that Kahan made over at the party? It was absolutely the grossest. They smoked them in an oven. It was so bad.
Oh, I remember
at my
being
house.
Down there
oh, great.
When they were doing
it. That's probably why I'm demoing that house.
God, it was nasty.
Anyway, these guys have these whitefish, and I go, dude, you didn't smoke those things, because that's big in back, you know.
They tried to do trout jerky, right?
They did okay.
They did. No, you're talking about Kahana and those kids.
They did
trout chub and all that stuff.
It's very good. Oily and all that. So these guys say, no, we didn't smoke them. We fried them. Well, like Jerry or anybody that's really into this, if you're from the Midwest, you probably know how to do this. And they did deep fried whiteys. And they were incredible.
I'm sure.
Nothing like the smoke. Everybody smokes the whitefish here, or they pickle them, and I don't eat pickle anything, so, but that's just gross. But the smoke, and they're just dry. If you go along, you want to have an experience on smoked fish, go along the southern shore of Lake Superior and just stop at all those. It's also chubs and all kinds of.
Fish town.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not as good as that stuff on the south. But it's all smoked, right? Everything is smoked. And it is incredible. By the time you get to Wisconsin, you've ate a jar of Tums. You buy a box of crackers and you're driving and you always stop every one of those smoked. I don't know if they still have them like they used to.
Sure.
But
either way, trout cakes, we'll try them.
Trout cakes.
Send them
Send us the recipe.
Cakes. Yeah.
Did you ever fish muskie?
I never have had a chance. I'm a firm believer in knowing your song well before you start singing. I have no, I don't think I've ever had a shot at a muskie, or been in an area where there was a muskie. But would love to one day.
Pike?
2.5 years lost my way. I didn't fish trout hardly ever.
Yeah. I have caught some big
pike. It was awful.
In some rivers before.
While targeting trout.
Yes.
Gotcha. Bycatch.
Yes.
One of my biggest pike in Michigan is on the PM. Fishing trout.
Yeah.
I killed one day once too. I caught it. I snagged it and killed it. Mm-hmm. I think it was like 47 inches long.
Yeah.
Jeez. It was right in the trout run. I saw him sitting there. Just went over with a jig fly.
Yeah.
Zipped him right in the nose. Got him, landed him, ate him. Jerry cooked him.
Jerry cooked him.
That's when he used to be the corporate chef for Teledyne International headquarters there. And anything like we'd knock a steelhead would die or whatever. And we'd take it to Jerry, because I stayed at his house.
Yeah, I bet he was so stoked too.
Oh, God. You want to talk about creative? They had a wine cellar there. Mm-hmm. And all the ladies would come in and they would test the wine. They'd bring their friends in and they'd refuse the first two or three bottles. I don't give a shit what it was. And they'd refuse it and Jerry'd cork it. I'd take it on the river with me the next day.
You drink wine? I never thought you drank wine.
Yeah, hardly ever.
Huh. I drank more wine in Argentina than I think I did my entire life in 1 week, which isn't much at all. But I discovered I liked wine.
When a certain person was here, living here, she said that my wine bill weekly was $400.
The name of, whatever. Moving on.
She who will not
Moving
be
on. Johnny's got to go scratch his tongue.
Wait, I had a question in there somewhere. Pike, muskie.
Might never, be from that video we watched a minute ago.
No, I don't think it was that one. All right, let's do... This question comes from Jordan Benware, who's an avid listener to our show, and he said, messaged me on Instagram, said, great episode of most recent The Fly Show. I recall Kelly saying that gear guys and gals have an advantage over fly anglers, and after watching Bill catch those big browns, I am a believer. That being said, I don't understand the advantages. It appears flies look more animated in the water than lures. If Kelly could provide some insight into why gear anglers have an advantage over fly anglers, that would be cool. Okay. Also,
jump.
What can fly anglers do to mimic gear anglers for more success? Thanks for the great show and podcast. That. And before you start
Let me hit that before you hit your thing.
Go. It's the vibration of life. You cannot beat the vibration of a
harmonic
of a hard bodied.
Yeah,
you're just throwing a better wavelength out.
Yeah,
and or including spinners. Mm-hmm. There's just ours look better, I think. If you put them in a tube tank, whatever they call that shit,
you get the,
and you watch us, like you take a bang tail, saltwater bang tail. That's what I got that brown in that one, right?
Yep.
In there. It moves more, but it doesn't have the mass to throw that wavelength out to give you that, they can get on a lure, or spinners in particular. I've asked hundreds of people, what's a spinner look like? A minnow. It's a fucking joke. What are you kidding me? Like a fucking minnow and a blender. It would be, it's not like nothing goes around a circle like that, but what a wavelength it throws, right?
Yeah.
But what was the second part about what can we do to ours?
Yeah, what can we do to mimic it? But real quick, before you get into this, I wanted to just mention that we did, mentioning an episode of The Fly Show, we've alluded to it for a while, and we've got Bill's crankbait back there.
Yeah,
but Bill did land a 30-plus inch fish. We didn't tape it, mainly because Kelly left his rod with the fly hanging in the water.
Kissed my ass. I might have got another one.
And
I was just working hard.
I had to stop filming and run to the back of the boat, save the rod. I thought it was a fish, so I hook set, but it wasn't. It was the ground.
The one with the bill cracked off?
Yeah, I don't know where it went to.
That's it, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's just, that's it.
Yeah, that's it, because the hooks are all bent out. Which
some of that happened in the net, too.
Yeah, a lot of people made that point. Did you see that one guy had a really angry comment to you?
Well, about what?
About that it's, your fault that fish got screwed up, because if you were worth your salt as a net guy, you would have picked the net up and grabbed the fish and stopped it from thrashing.
The fish was locked into that rubber net by that.
Immediately.
Spun up so bad. Yes. And
It's part
of it. I was trying to hand the net. I was trying to get it over to get it to Bill. You can't hold the net like that in that boat. You have to have two people.
Because we're high out of the water, and it's just, that's kind of a shit happens kind of thing.
Yeah, shit happens.
As someone who nets fish as for a living, it's almost impossible. You hope that they don't get into it and make one turn. Like, you try and hold it by the back, but if it's between my hand and them, I'm not going to let it go into my hand.
Two treble hooks in a net, front one's in it, stuck, and he's twist spinning like a gator roll.
Yeah.
You know what I'm doing?
It's pretty powerful.
Watching.
Yes. Yeah. The video is like that. It's such Monday morning quarterback. It's such a Monday morning quarterback comment from that guy. Like,
you notice how fast we got the fish in and out of the back in the water?
And we're in a lifted boat. Like, we're trying to be good to the fish. And so literally it's like netted and then thrashing. There's no time to.
It's what they do.
It's just.
Well, and if you had one hook, it'd be one thing. But the back hook. There's a hook in the fish and a hook in the net.
Right.
And he's rolling. If you notice the net, like, it was rubber, so it starts twisting up, and then it untwists, right? And
then everybody was trying to play gotcha with Bill, being like, when he's, if you listen for a second and put your ego aside, Bill is trying to give really sound advice, being that when you get a big fish, check your gear, look at your hooks, look at your tippet, replace all this stuff. He's trying to give really good advice, and people are saying, well, the fish didn't do that. It was the net that screwed up your gear.
Look.
Yes. It's important to look at it.
Yeah.
The point still applies, right? Like, check your stuff.
Fish bit the hook and broke the thing, and it hits the net, and that's the end of the battle.
Right.
Shit goes south, right? But
cost of war.
I didn't, most of those I glance over because I just think it's, people just got to express themselves somehow.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they.
And we do appreciate all of our commenters. I mean, it's
awesome. I just, like, when it's just being dumb, like, I've fished with so many people in the world, and when that fish comes in, they don't give a shit how it gets in that net.
Yeah.
And they don't give a shit. They just want that fish in the net, you know? And there's a lot of, I would do this right up until you got a 30 inch on your line and you go, I just want to see that fish in the net.
But getting back to the point, what can you do to try to...
To better mimic the...
You can't. Yeah. I mean, until you go...
Well, we already have.
Yeah,
the streamers. The articulation...
Don't make it look that way, but you can't throw out a wavelength.
No, you never could.
No.
We're using rattles. But
I've never seen them change anything.
Yeah, me either.
I know certain smallie guys and walleye guys...
Seems like a lot of musky guys fish them.
I have no idea. Yeah, so a lot of them have them in them. Never seen it be a detriment. We used to put them in the flies. The first ever
D&D's did.
Yeah, D&D's have them.
But
long before he was alive, we put them in. That, remember on the stone, we did the first keel. What was that belly? It wasn't belly bumper. The keel bucktail. Remember?
Oh,
and we put rattles in all those.
I forgot about that.
And we were doing it. And that first day of that fly, we crushed on that. Every single one within one fish or 20 casts, the fucking rattle was broke. Yeah. And they still ate it, right? But when the first one ate it, we were right below cars, right, when we started out. And that fish charged and ate that fly. And by the time I got it in, the rattle was... But in your brain, you've made very few casts. And this fish, he didn't just come after it. He was racing a long ways. Felt it and came like 6 feet. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got it in, the rattle was gone. Broke, right? Didn't change the effect of the fly.
Right.
When I put them in there for a year or two, putting them in stuff, the only thing I would say about the rattle, I don't know. I know guys who put bead chains in that move up and down so they can like twitch it and click it. And I'm not, one way or the other. If it makes you feel good, great. I mean, I did it, like I said, for a year. The one thing about the mass, I think, where the dungeon style fly came, and or including the first, the TNA was previous to the dungeon, but that stacked wool head, it gave it a little bit more mass to push the wave when it would swim, and the dungeon style heads definitely pushed that wavelength. And so the wavelength comes off, I think the push of the head does a lot. But when you think about it, on a jointed Rapala, I don't think there's one up there, but if you have another joint here, even before the whole rattle theory, those things were clicking. If you go under, because I talked about when I started diving when I was really young, before the trout thing, I would go out in the Great Lakes and carry a spinning rod with a golden black jointed Rapala 7. And I would just swim looking for fish, and I'd cast it out, and I'd sink underwater, and I'd start reeling and watching. Mm-hmm. I could hear that thing.
Yeah,
I could hear that lure tick, 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 yep. tick, tick, and it, you know, just the rattle of the they're touching themselves, right?
Yeah.
The two pieces are. And so I'm sure it has something that draws it in, but there's plenty of, you know, spoons and blades, things that don't rattle that fish like a champ.
Yep.
I mean, there's no getting around it. But I think the only thing you can do, it's pretty simple if you think, and it may be like, I thought that was going to happen with the original Game Changer. You'd have that extra mass,
right?
But I didn't see that happen. But but we get the wiggle out of the marabou or the, you know, deceiver style tails. You get some wiggle, but how are you going to mass is mass,
right?
You can't really do it. And anything, I mean, I'm waiting for something new, like what? Well, if the D&D, for example,
they did do something new a long time ago, like those disco cones. If you want to do them, they do throw that wobble into it. But like, at what point do you just go, well,
is that more of a swing thing or are guys throwing that on?
I saw them do it on streamers too.
Yeah. But strip bugs.
Yeah. There's the Stanley streamer, which we've brought up before, that had the bill in it. That's back in the 60s that Stan Levinsey did.
At that point, I just want to throw a crank. Like,
yeah,
I mean, there is a line. Like, at that point, if we're on that line, I'd rather just pick up a spin rod and throw a crank because it's fun.
Yeah.
But, like, the challenge is to get them on the fly. And if you're talking about mass, really, you know, the trend is to shed water. With the original Kill Whitey, I tried a lot of different laser dubs on it. And while you have all these different color options that you don't have with natural materials, I never got the action that I did with wool and a lot of wool because there was more mass up front and more resistance, which created a bigger kick.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I don't see when you have something that's super light. Blaine did his T-bone, which is basically creating dams with tubing to create, you know, a bigger silhouette for those musky flies. That's really a great idea too. But again, you know, I mean, it sheds water and it creates a bigger wavelength, but there's nothing you can do for like a rattle trap or a Rapala. I mean, it's just there's you can't beat it. Also, side note, you got one choice rest of your life: black and gold or black and silver. What are you going with?
Gold.
Me too. Black and gold for the win. I would.
And the right skyline, I can catch on gold. I get more versatility of a gold than I do silver. But on
black and gold.
And if I got to pick my skyline, then it might be the silver. Mm. But
I'd go black and gold.
Made you think of that?
Oh, it's that
we both fished a lot of rats.
Fished that my whole life until I fly fished. That was, if I had a job to do, I wanted to catch fish, it was usually black and gold. And I had rainbow, every single trout, my tackle box had everything. But when it came time for like
good time,
yeah, that was it. Sometimes that Rebel Craw too, that thing was deadly back in the day too. But black and gold.
I grew up surf casting on Lake Michigan, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, since I can remember, it's the only time I ever really fished with my dad. And we would go to Deepwater Point and Acme, and we'd throw little Cleos. Mm-hmm. And you'd throw a little Cleo out, and the lake wasn't as clear as it is now, but it was still pretty clear, right? Mm-hmm. And it used to have a dock station out there, and there's like, I don't know, 8 pilings still out there at that time. And I've thrown a Cleo, and not a big, you know, 2.5-incher, and at 3 maybe, throw it out and hit and maybe get 20 retreat, you know. And back then I'm using the 308, which is the most, Mitchell 300 is the most famous probably spinning reel in history at one point, for sure it was. But I got one, I have one all rigged up, the same rod, same everything. It's my dad's rod. And I took that out here, and it's so freaking slow. I don't know how we fished them. I mean, I'm cranking that thing. I'm throwing a spinner out in the river here, trying to keep it coming back at me. I'm like, I can't keep up with it. Shit, some of my spinning reels now are 40 inches of revolution. I mean, it's like, phew, I'm in, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, throw these things out there and start cranking. And three pilings down, fish is going away from me. I saw it turn around, feel that little Cleo doing this. Mm-hmm. And I watched it. Well, I mean, it wasn't some giant, but like 6-pound fish, but it was just like ran wide open.
Rock.
Right?
Yeah.
And but they could feel that. I mean, I looked up when I first started talking, when Dave Johnson told me about this whole wavelength thing and some other ways, things that were happening. I started researching it. And it said a 2.5-inch minnow could be detected, bait minnow could be detected 200 yards upstream and 100 yards downstream of itself on a flea motion,
yeah,
you know, a fleeing motion. Mm-hmm. So that tells you with our flies, you know, which are pretty big, but there's if a 3-inch, 2.5, 3-inch minnow can send that wavelength out, we're sending wavelength,
yeah,
and plenty of it, but we're never going to do... I mean, you think it, some of the mass of the body baits, it's going to be hard to do. You can make them look just... Everybody's tried to make a fly look like a freaking wrap.
Right.
Everybody on Earth's done that. I mean, we just came out with the feather stuff, that whole imprinted feather thing with MFC.
Yeah.
Everybody wants it to look... I mean,
yeah.
Everybody wants it, have tried it.
Yeah.
Well, another... Like, we're talking about hard baits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's also this entirely different sector of... you know, soft plastics that mm-hmm. are also extremely effective too, that we can kind of mimic those a little bit easier. But I mean, it's really hard to be just a, like,
I can tell you right now, if I had to pick one, you said wrap, but if I had one thing, I'd have a 4.5-inch paddle tail swim bait.
Yeah.
And I would, I'd have a Strike King KVD. I would fish it anywhere in the world and guarantee you, I don't give a shit what fish it is. We'll eat that thing. Yeah.
That probably throws way more of a wave than any materials we use on flies too, right? Because it's solid. Even though it's moving, it's got a, like,
it's,
I imagine,
moving, it's pretty solid. Well, it depends. You get one that big, it's, you know, it's a front end size of a cigar. I mean, not that big, but it, you know, big as a fat ink pen like that. But I mean,
I just,
but then you got that solid paddle tail behind it that is just getting shoved back and forth.
My guess is that it's not a porous material, right? So water's not passing through it.
No, hell no, they're solid.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean, is that it's kicking.
And a paddle tail is different than just a fluke or any other style of soft plastic, a worm. It's got something that's, you know, stopping it, and it's kicking its tail.
Do you still have one right over there somewhere? You have that one over there forever. Yeah, that.
So you've got
that.
So
I imagine, because, you know, the feathers.
And you know why this is here, right? I'm trying to figure out how I could make something look just like that.
Yeah, is that where the feather came from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the feather, it came from this, because this is an imprint. This is something over it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably nothing better than that color right there, that pearl color anyway.
Yeah.
But, and then I started looking at trying to do what I was marking my own feathers. And then I asked Jake, and he said they could do it, so... And he did. But that thing going back and forth when you're pulling it, I mean, that's a lot of...
Well, the other thing, too, a lot of people don't know, is basically when the fish skulls first came out, that was like the first kind of almost like terminal type of materials that came out in a while. And Kelly would have basically all his In Fisherman, all of his magazines laid out on the table, and tried to figure out how he could imprint that into a streamer too. So you've always taken, you know, for cranks and stuff like that.
Will you explain what the fish skull is for people that might not know?
One right
here. It's just a big
conehead.
Like the Roman Mauser.
Flying fishermen, whatever the hell they call themselves,
they
stole all of his shit.
Yeah.
He was the first guy to do a tungsten skull. There's his fish skull here.
That was the sculpin helmet.
Yeah, the helmets.
And then they stole that one.
Yep, and then this was the skull.
So that was the original one.
That's all I have left.
That was the original one. So he had all these magazines laid out with all the different wraps and hard baits and stick baits and everything, and he tried to copy it with marabou. That was why it was called the Barely Legal. It was because it was basically trying to cross in that respect.
Gotcha.
The conehead was never really a thing until later.
Also Roman Mausers.
Well, and the
beads. Also, giving credit, the first guy to throw beads.
Yeah.
And he didn't put them on his fly. And he got really no credit for any of them. And then Flying Fishman stole this shit here, and then suddenly there's theirs. And then they did the invisible skulls. So that was pretty cool, too. But,
Fish mask, yeah. So either way, it's always been about trying to emulate the terminal world. I mean, they've got so many more materials at their disposal, and not as many rules.
Yeah, the rule is to find something better.
Yeah, they're always trying to innovate. We have all these things where we can't do this and we can't do that. But like I'm a hypocrite for saying it. You know, like after a certain point, you know, I just want to throw a crank. I don't need to do it on the fly anymore. I mean, like you see that with the twister tails and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you're getting into soft plastics, and plastics are part of our fly tying world now. I mean, you look at all the textile places from Italy that are coming out with polar chenille and all that stuff. It's all plastic. So where do you draw the line? Yeah. Everybody's a hypocrite at some point, unless you're throwing completely natural materials. So how far do you want to go down that rabbit hole? End of story. You can't emulate.
Do whatever makes you happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's really what it comes back down to. That's the answer for most of it.
If you go back into the, I don't remember, maybe the 70s, Jim Tini put a little French blade on the back of one of his flies.
Yeah. Get run out of town.
Holy shit. I mean, it hurt his reputation for a long time. And then Stan Levinsey, I can't find the damn thing. Move a little bit. I don't know if I put it right here. I have the Stanley Streamer, which a metal bill. I've showed it before. It was in there. I thought it's hanging up all the musky flies. But it was a metal bill, and it was looked like a coast, like a lot of the coastal, or a lot of the trolling flies, because that's what it was for originally, was for the Great Lakes when the salmon first came back. But it had a metal bill down. It was made for flies. Unbelievable what it did to that. I mean, I fished those for summer runs. God dang, they would just hum for that thing. But you want to get run out of town in our industry? Put a freaking metal bill on a fly. Because now you are the, as they call me, the glorified bait thrower.
Yes.
Or crankbait.
You've been a glorified jigger, too.
Yeah, I like that, too.
You're just a glorified jigger.
Thank you, for whoever told me that. I appreciate it.
Make sure to enunciate that one.
Actually, it was a bait guy, actually.
Was it?
It was the original.
The guy that didn't like my...
Yeah.
There's a lot of those out there.
I know none of us are physicists or
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Hydrodynamicists. Do you think wavelengths travel less distance in a river like ours that's very turbulent and shallow? I mean, I imagine, like... I feel like I've seen documentaries about waves
doing their vertical sonar, line.
Right? Yeah, they got the vertical line. No, but like, you know, you send out the wavelength and it travels out until it hits things, right? Mm-hmm. Where it either rebounds and then it eventually subsides over time or over distance.
I mean, current's
got
to have something to do with it, too.
That's
right.
I'm wondering, it runs into the top
of the water.
But the
study that I'm talking about that I read was about a river. But it doesn't say Madison or Missouri or Yellowstone.
I imagine wavelengths travel.
They travel so much faster through the water than they do air. So I'm sure they carry a long ways. But then you think about it, you got 1,000 fish in this river, right? Yep. Maybe 100 at a time are running from something. So you got to discern it. Just because you send a wavelength doesn't mean it's discerned as a distress wavelength, and is it five fish just got pushed off by an otter? Is it the otter pushing it?
Right.
Who knows what's pushing it? And could they actually database that?
The osprey diving in the water.
Yeah, there's a bajillion things, but the point is we're using it at our advantage as best we can.
Yeah.
And it dissipates at 50 feet in this river because it's humming.
Yeah.
Or does it go 50? Who knows? But we do know the fly hits, and we're just planning on that fly being within 6-8 feet of the fish. Somewhere in that zone, and that when your nose getting there.
And that's what I guess the theory is that you have to be more accurate with your fly in a river like this than you would in a slower, maybe deeper river where those wavelengths might travel further.
Yeah.
And who knows if that's real in practice, but it just makes me think of that fish in the canyon in Chile with you, the one that came off the rock wall, or in the canyon. Like, that water was almost dead in there. Yeah. And there's still some move to it, but it's very lakey, very deep. It has, solid rock walls on the side that you'd think would reverberate really well instead of kind of breaking it up like a rock bottom.
He found it.
Yeah, he found it quickly, I might add. He found it very quickly.
It's like that steelhead I was talking about on the Great Lakes there where he was, when I say it was three pilings away, that's 60 feet.
Right.
you know, maybe not, maybe 45. I don't know if they were 10, 20 feet, I think. But it, I mean, that lure hit and didn't make 3 foot of movement. That fish, and he's going the opposite direction. He's going, you know, down. He's going along the shoreline, and he spun around. He didn't casually spin, turn around. Yeah, he spun around and just, choo, here I come.
How fast do you think scent travels in water?
Can only go as fast as the current.
Really?
Yeah.
But what, so...
How would it dissipate other than that?
But what about, like, I guess in the ocean when they, like, you know, they say sharks can smell things miles away?
Yeah, but it had to be carried to them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So I'm thinking specifically about when my dad...
There's a lot of that being kind of debunked also about the whole wavelength thing.
How so?
That the wavelengths, like krill and shit like that,
yeah,
it's not the scent, so much, it's the vibration that they're sending so far out.
Right.
And that the scent has to be carried. It's a physical object. It has to be carried to it, right? So it can't, it's not a wavelength.
Yeah.
It's a scent.
Right.
And so it has to be carried to
it. Yeah, but it depends on the species, bloodhound versus a human. You can smell that pile of rotten chicken right there, but they can smell it from...
But that's airborne.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the water has to get from one point to another.
But it's same in the air, wouldn't it?
Right. But, what do you mean? It's being carried? Yeah.
Yeah.
But so it's in the water.
It has to get carried.
But it has to carry it. The wind blows from here to there pretty quick. The current doesn't necessarily go from here to there.
Well, that's
in a river, it would be.
The other, you know, I've thought
about
this.
We're going to get some good write-ins from actual smart people.
Yeah, yeah, please. If you know this stuff, like, let us know, because I'm very curious. Another thing I wondered, like, I imagine the wavelength travels better downstream than it does upstream. I'm sure it goes upstream.
Yeah, it was 200 yards one way and 100 yards the other.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like one of the ones that
it's like the ambulance, like the siren, you know, when you...
So you haven't fished salt water much, but you might have seen this. But if you were to clean a fish on a dock, like if you ever seen flipper out there when you're fishing and you get a fish on, you'll see, you know, these things are out there. Flipper's out there doing his little thing, three of them swimming, and you hook a ladyfish or something stupid, and those three fish will be out 300 yards from you, right? Dolphin are so fast. I mean, yep, they are coming so fast. You'll see them, you see the fins up there, and it's all, oh, kumbaya, let's go swim with them, right? And you'll hook a little fish, and before you can, it seems virtually impossible,
there,
and all three of them are on your fish instantly.
Yep.
They're worse than sharks, if you ask me. They come in so fast. Now, if you were to gut a fish and throw it in the water right there, you think that thing would come from in 4 seconds? I don't think it's getting carried, but they feel that fish.
Right.
In particular, certain fish, like I snagged a ladyfish one time, which is already a psycho little bastard anyway, right? And I swear that those things made it from, I think we were on by Pine Isle, Pine Key. I was with Brucey Chart and Jimmy Teeny, and I swear they came a half a mile. It seemed like in 10 seconds. They were gone, because I was looking at them, because they're out there and they just kept going. And then all of a sudden you see them once, just like this, and goodbye ladyfish. It was incredible.
Yeah,
but felt that fish, is the point. They felt that vibration, and they were hundreds of yards away.
Right.
Right? You wouldn't, that scent couldn't travel. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know how it could travel without current pushing it.
That feels very rational.
It'd be like putting a bubble, you know, here it is, a little plastic bead.
Yeah.
Well, it gets carried to there,
mm-hmm,
doesn't it?
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. I mean, I was thinking about when I was down in Cuba with my dad, and, you know, we were out on the boat, and he had to piss, and he was really hot, so he decided to jump in the water.
And the dolphin bit his dick.
The guy's kind of, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Really good aim, too. The guy's like, you know, he speaks very little English and he's trying to communicate, like, no, get out of the water. The moment he jumped into the water, you know, we're looking around to see if there's any sharks or anything. He jumps in. All of a sudden, it's like they appear out of nowhere. I mean, all of a sudden, you see three dark shapes that are coming. And they're not coming fast, but it's like, dun, dun.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming. I go, Dad, get out of the water. And I like these two guys. I am a bullshitter at heart. You know, I like to screw around. I'm like, Dad, get out of the water. He's like, yeah, fuck you. I'm like, out now. I'm like really trying to convey in my tone that I am being serious. He still didn't believe me. He gets out of the boat with a shark like 30 feet away.
The predators are meant to pick on distress signals. I don't think we can actually know the whole scent thing, unless you talk to somebody who understands molecules and water, how things are dispersed in it.
Call Matt.
Yeah, I don't think he's a... He's
he probably is.
He'd probably have a pretty good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, better idea than me.
Actually, John, that's a great question.
Yeah, I can see that.
He'd come back the next day with an answer.
Probably.
Yeah.
Five studies. Gets pushy, doesn't he?
Who, Johnny?
Me?
Yeah.
I just don't like it beating a dead horse.
Johnny, what year was this guiding?
What are you talking about?
Years you've been guiding.
Oh, I believe.
Seems like one.
Five, six.
To let you know.
I think this is technically my 20th season. But that was the first year I started it in like July. So not a full season. 19th full season, 20th year of having a guide.
Your 20th year.
How'd it go?
How'd it go?
Yeah.
Pretty good. It fished really well here. We had a 2 or 3 week window in August that it sucked. But it sucked everywhere. And got better. It was just really sectional after that. But we had better dry fly fishing. Had great streamer fishing again. Better. It keeps getting better. We keep seeing bigger and bigger fish here every fall. So that's been really, really good. But we had a great crew this year, and numbers were way up. We had a lot of really good customers, and it seemed like a great year all the way around.
What was your favorite fish you netted this year?
I don't remember.
What's the biggest fish you netted this year?
Boy, I don't know. We didn't hit 2 foot, I don't think.
I thought that
was... Oh, we did. We did get a 2 foot.
The salmon fly fish.
Yeah, we got the 2 foot on... I thought it was 23.5, but Nate caught it and taped it, and I brushed mine. But it was 24 on the nose. We had a 23.5, 23.75. The biggest one was 24.
Nice. Yeah.
Biggest one I've ever had anybody get on a dry fly, though. That was awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It's a huge fish on a dry fly.
Yep.
Giant. Yeah.
A huge fish, period.
It's a huge fish on a streamer. Yeah, it's a huge fish on a Rapala. It's a huge fish.
I will never get tired of telling people, stop with the acting like 2 foot's not a giant.
It is.
I that's why remember I said when 20 was the word we used. Yeah. When 20 was like, what? You got a 20?
I was talking to a guy the other day who was a buddy of mine, and we were just bullshitting about big fish. And I'm like, somebody made some comment about how I catch so many giant fish. And I'm like, I don't catch so many giant fish. I hold them pretty good. They go, oh, you've posted like a bunch of fish close to 30 this year on your Instagram. I was like, I haven't gotten a 2 footer. Like, I've gotten a couple around that like 22 range, 22.5, but no.
It's really hard to break 22. 23 is where it starts. 24 is like every inch after that.
And then somebody's looking at that, a photo of it going, that's 30 plus, and that means it's a huge fish.
Yep.
So.
Awesome. Well, you're kind of like a carny. You've got small hands.
Tiny.
Tiny. Smell like crab. Very. Smell like cabbage.
Is that an Always Sunny joke?
No, I think that's from Austin Powers.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. Connie's small hands. Smell like cabbage. The circus folk, you know?
Yeah. What's your favorite movie to quote? If you had to pick one.
I don't know, man.
Johnny quotes every movie that's ever...
I don't. Actually,
you use Caddyshack the most because people get it. They all get Caddyshack.
Jaws is fun. Like they Jaws.
Tell you how many times I've posted something online that you've said, and somebody's like, I love the so-and-so reference.
I would say 98% of what I say is either bullshit or a reference from somewhere else. Yeah. But yeah, I make do.
In the same boat.
Yeah.
So Caddyshack, is that your answer?
That's just my answer that I hear him.
I think it changes.
You do hundreds of them, but the ones that, when you need somebody to get the joke, it always comes out of that.
What do you think the most quotable movie is?
Oof, boy, that's a really tough one.
I'm probably going Step Brothers. I think that's
never seen
so
it.
Good.
Never heard of it.
Fish big.
Never even heard of it.
You've never seen Step Brothers?
Well, if I haven't heard of it, I probably haven't seen it either.
It's Will Ferrell. It's great. I'll send it to you.
Ferrell.
It's him and John C. Reilly, and they're 40-year-olds. Their parents get married, and so they're both like loser children that move in together, and they just wreak havoc, and it's great.
Yeah, it's a funny movie.
You got to watch it.
Pretty pertinent nowadays.
Yeah, exactly. I'm pretty easily amused. That is a funny one. But either way, I don't know.
Talladega Nights.
Was after Talladega that they made that.
I just think that is the funniest. I watched it twice in a row.
It's the same two guys. Just, yeah.
I mean, I just, it's one of the few movies I literally, Like, I come down, like, I'm by myself at the house, right? And I'll watch that. And I have to stop. I cry laughing.
I just, so good.
Just say crepes. They really are pretty good.
Yeah. It's like, and we look forward to...
They're like a little pancake, really?
We look forward to the release next year of Mystic Mountain Blueberry. There's a lot of...
Oh, my God. I just... I can... It is so dumb.
That's his style, though.
It's my... It just hits me right in the...
It's so good.
Everything about it. The whole NASCAR theme.
Yeah. Hmm? But you were asking... You don't know who John C. Reilly is, the guy basically that plays the Magic
The gay
Man.
Guy?
No.
Oh, Magic Man?
Yeah.
Now Shake and bake.
Now you don't.
Yeah. But that makes no sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's the
sense.
Who's the gay guy?
That's Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah,
that's Borat. Borat, Bruno... You've seen those either? Borat is another. That's an unbelievably quotable movie.
Oh, that was two people you were talking about.
No, Sacha Baron Cohen.
He plays the two guys. You never seen him? He kidnaps Pamela Anderson.
Strong showing.
I don't think he really watched the LEG show. It doesn't sound
probably not. You might like it, though.
I would. Everything you guys have. When I do finally see it, I like it.
I bet you would like Borat, but not the LEG show.
Yeah.
Are those your shows?
No, Borat's amazing.
Is that a show
or it's a movie?
It's a movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Where? Yeah.
Okay. Do we have something else?
We'll wrap this one up. you guys have any closing remarks? Band of the week. Let's do movie of the week. I'm going Borat.
Wow. How do you do that? I know it's going to be one of three for you.
Thank you.
Go for it.
Which one do you want to go with?
I've seen three movies.
No. Well, I mean.
I've seen them a lot and well.
I've got two films, one for each of you.
Yeah, that would be one of them.
Yeah.
Hmm?
What are your three movies?
Jeremiah Johnson.
Tombstone. A La Josie Wales. It's like that.
There that's what, God, was it David? Yeah, David Matthew on Instagram, he hit me up. He's hit me up a couple times asking when I'm going to finally watch The Outlaw Josie Wales.
I wouldn't put Tombstone. I don't know. It'd be top five.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a John Wayne movie. Probably Shootist. Yeah, that'd probably be my top. Kind of dig Pale Rider too. But that's a Clint movie.
Gotcha.
But that's just. What did I go with? I forget.
Well, just pick one. Movie of the week.
Jeremiah Johnson.
There it is.
What's yours?
I'm going to go with, because nobody else has seen it. I mean, a lot of people have seen it, and you haven't seen it. Go watch Royal Tenenbaums. That's really
good. Yeah, I need to watch that.
Yeah, what? It's a great one. Royal Tenenbaums. It's a Wes Anderson movie. It's very funny.
Yeah, I've never heard of him.
That's all right. You don't have to. It's hilarious.
I did watch one I really liked. The Beekeeper. It should be reality.
Gotcha.
Huh?
It's not the Bee Movie?
No.
Do you know about the Bee Movie?
I can't remember the guy's name.
One of the heavily memed movies on the internet because a guy falls in love with a bee and they have...
No, he's still American love.
The Beekeeper is a badass. He's his own agency. Basically, there's just a handful of these guys that are...
I've heard of
Chris? He was the guy in...
I didn't watch it.
He's Christmas in... Expendables would be... Expendables.
What about Roadhouse?
Roadhouse is good. I watched that the other day, too.
So you can only pick one.
I just can't watch it because when Patrick Swayze hits the heavy bag and stuff, it's just really not good. I just wish they would have taken that part out, but it was just really bad.
So it kind of takes you out of the illusion.
Yeah, it was really not fun. But, yeah, the Beekeeper, he's Christmas and... Just super handsome guy, karate guy. Oh, shit, what's his name?
Jason Statham.
Yes.
Oh, actually.
Yes.
That's pretty good. And it's pull there, huh?
And when the beehive's in jeopardy, that means the president, who happens to be a woman at this point, takes it out.
That doesn't take you out of the illusion?
Hmm? No.
No, I was just kidding.
Actually, it doesn't take out the president. It takes out his kid, who's a dipshit, but it's perfect.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm laughing at my own joke here. All right, well, that was a great episode. Hopefully you all enjoyed it. Got a little sidetracked at the end, but that's fun stuff. So, What's that?
For whom?
Yeah, hopefully our listeners. Hopefully they enjoy.
I think there's 100 guys who just clicked off.
yeah, probably. But those who are still hanging with us, those are the real ones. So thanks for listening. That. Thanks, Johnny, for
Thank
showing
Thank you, guys.
Up.
That was fun.
Appreciate it.
Fun
we'll stuff. Do it again.
Last show and first show.
Huh?
Our last show, the fifth, or... 1 year anniversary and our first show of the second.
You only get one anniversary.
No shit,
Jack. Help helps you out.
Yeah, this is Johnny's marital. Johnny's marital. You don't get cards for anybody until you're married to him.
That's
and
not
you
true.
Only get one
I
anniversary. You can't have an anniversary of
you had like
the
six
first
anniversaries.
Date.
The first that was the first time we had spaghetti together. The first time we went to the herbal.
I didn't have any of
that. It's hilarious. You get one anniversary. That's when you got hitched.
Yes.
Hope that helps you out. Thanks.
Goodbye.
See you next time.
Bye.